brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with over 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free book of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Hello, everyone. I'm Jen, and tonight I'm here with Karen, Kristen, and Brittany. Hello, ladies.
Hi.
Hello.
How's everyone doing?
Brittany's pretty not good.
I know. Brittany's kind of like dying on us, but she's.
I have a cold. I'll be fine. I'm going to power through.
She's like, I have tea and I have tissues. Let's do this.
We believe in you.
If I disappear for a while, it's because I had to grab a cough drop because I'm choking to death. But other than that, we're good to go.
It's all good.
I'm amazing because it's December and it's like 65 degrees down here in good old North Carolina.
Dear Karen, bite me. Because up here in New England, it's finally turned cold because we've been a little spoiled up here. Like, it's been, like, in the 50s and 60s, like, almost t-shirt weather. And it's finally turned, like, frigid cold. Like, you need the heat and the heating blankets and, like, jackets. Mm-hmm. And it's not okay. I am not a fan. There was ice on my windshield the other day. Ice.
It's been okay. Raining here.
Yeah, today it was, like, freezing rain up here. It was a great time. Great time. Not a fan. So I forget how much I love winter until it comes. And then I'm like, oh, no, I remember now. I despise it. Why do I? Oh, goodness me. All right. So let's talk a little bit about what we've been reading. So Kristen, as our guest, because this is our, in case I forgot to mention it, this is our book review episode for The Year We Fell Down by Serena Bowen. And we're going to get to that in just a minute. But first, we are going to get to what we've been reading. And this was Kristen's book choice, by the way. So it's her first book choice ever. A lot of pressure on Kristen to see if the rest of us like it. You'll get our verdict in a moment. But first, Kristen, what have you been reading?
I spent a lot of time in airports. So there was a lot of reading time for the last couple of, you know, days, weeks, whatever. I read and finished Maybe Someday by Colleen Hoover, which was so good. I highly recommend it. It's just a really beautiful story, I love it. I also finished For the Record by Charlotte Huang, which was given to me by Karen. I really liked it. The ending was not quite, like, what's the word? Substantial? Not quite. It didn't quite end how I hoped it would or how I wanted it to, but there's an opening for her to kind of write some more in this world, so maybe she's got plans. I don't know. But I would definitely read more about the characters if she wrote more. And lastly, I started Nuts by Alice Clayton, which is about this farmer dude up in the Hudson Valley, and this chick who, like, moves back home to the little baby hometown. And it was really funny. Sonia reviewed it for Hypeable, and I had been meaning to read it, and it went on sale on Amazon a while back, so I picked it up. And I started it on the plane and then left my Kindle on the plane. So
sad. Did you ever find it?
I haven't yet.
No.
It was a Kindle that I won in an author giveaway, believe it or not. So I'm hoping I get it back, but I haven't heard word yet, and I'm trying to keep in touch with Southwest and see if I'll get it. But so I couldn't finish it on the plane, which was killing me. But it's a really funny book, and it was really good as far as I got. So I'll finish it later.
Excellent. It's so sad. I'm always, like, triple, quadruple careful. Like, all my electronics, like, go back in my bag before the plane lands. Like, and I, like, double, triple check because I would totally do something like that.
Yep.
Go ahead.
I'm usually a double checker too, and this one time just left it in the seat back, and not happy.
Always.
Yeah, when I was transferring buses in England, I was on, like, I took a bus for like 8 hours to get to London, and I had a transfer before I went back up to Scotland, and I left my computer in the back seat of the bus.
God.
And I got off the bus. I was waiting in line for my second bus, and I remembered, and I saw the bus pulling around to like go back on the highway, like around the station, and I darted across the bus terminal, and I stopped the driver like by waving frantically in the street, and he let me back on the bus to get it out of the back seat. But it was just about to be finals when I was studying abroad. I was like, oh my God, if I left my computer, that would have been the end.
Oh God,
that would have been terrible.
Never told my parents that story, so hopefully they don't listen to pipe.
Oh my gosh. All right. So, let's see. Ooh, I actually got to read books, you guys. I took my horrible, horrible test on Monday, which is super exciting for the mere reason that I no longer have to study every single night and I can now read books and I have a lot of them to read. But I went with some really light, fluffy, like fun books to read. So I read Enrapture by Candace Camp. It's the third in a set of three books. It's set in Scotland, which is lovely, and I loved it. Candace Camp writes a lot of really fun historical romance novels, and they're always really, like, they usually come in, like, sets of three, like, trilogies, but they're not, like, you can read them independently, because this was the first one I read in this trilogy, even though it's the last book. It doesn't really matter. And it's super fun, and there's always, like, a little mystery or something involved in it, and the characters are really interesting and different. They're not your typical characters that you would find in a romance, you know, Edwardian novel kind of thing. So loved it. And then the other one I read was another historical romance. And it was a novella and it's by Tessa Dare. It comes out this week. And it's part of her Spindle Cove series. So if any of you guys have read, her Spindle Cove series, you'll know what I'm talking about because it's fantastic. It's a lot of fun. It's basically about this place called Spindle Cove. And it's where all these really kind of blue stocking spinsters go and live, or girls who just don't want to be part of society because it didn't work out for them. And of course, things happen and there are always different men around that are prominent yet broken in some way, which is a theme, right? And so this one is Lord Dashwood Missed Out. And I loved the lead character in this. She is the sassiest thing ever. She basically is heartbroken by this boy, this Lord Dashwood, who was a friend of the family from the time they were little, and she really thought that when she had her, you know, come out in society, that they would end up being together, and he was kind of a jerk. So he went away because he's a cartographer. He, like, makes maps, which is awesome. And he goes out, he leaves, and she writes this very long letter, and it ends up getting printed in the society pages about how he missed out on all these things. And it's really entertaining and funny. And it was a super quick read. So I love that. And if you guys haven't read the Spindle Cove series and you're into like historical romancy things, I definitely suggest checking it out because it's funny. And they're filled with really great, strong female characters for a time period that doesn't really incorporate a lot of that. So yeah, definitely check those out. They were really fun to kind of pick up books again and read and like have time to actually do that. So yay. All right, so I don't know if anyone listened to our last episode, but it was our huge gift giving episode, our gift guide episode, and there was a lot of things that we talked about that we all wanted to buy. I think Karen and Brittany can back me up on this.
Yeah,
it's a habit. Every year we buy stuff and we're like, oh, but maybe I could get that. One of the things we didn't think about mentioning at the time, but we're going to mention to you right now, is giving audible.com as a present or as a gift to someone for birthday, holiday, whatever, because you can give the gift of Audible. They have a great thing going on where you can gift X amount of months to somebody. And it's fantastic because it's so easy to pop in an audiobook when you're driving or, you know, when you're traveling by train. And lots of people do that this holiday season. There's a lot of traveling going on, just like Kristen just did. So we highly suggest doing that for the holidays, giving audible.com as a present. And they can always go get a free book at audiblepodcast.com/bookhype, as always. Great things on offer. So definitely check out audible.com this holiday season. All right, now, Kristen, the pressure is on because this was your very first book choice ever for
yes. Pride.
So we have a little buy or borrow that we're going to go on with right now. And I know you know how Karen feels because, well, she's your roommate, and you gave her the read. So, Karen, go ahead. How do you feel about it?
I would definitely go with buy. I was pleasantly surprised. This was actually, I believe, the first book Kristen gave me to sort of get started on the romance genre that she's been going crazy over. And it was definitely a great one to start with because, yeah, it had romance and it was really lovely, but there was a lot more substance to the story, and I really enjoyed the characters, especially as we see them again throughout the whole series.
Awesome, awesome. How about you, Miss Brittany? How is this book? I never know what you're going to like. You're a little harder to choose for, so tell us what you thought.
I loved it. I'm a definite buy, but do not buy on Kindle because this book, it said that I had 92% of the book read, so I was pumped. I turned the final page of a chapter, and I'm like, yes, I still have 8% more to go. That's at least another chapter. But no, the book was over, and there was an excerpt from another book tagged on to the end, and I was highly disappointed. So buy the book, but don't buy it on Kindle. I love this type of book. These are usually my summer reads, this type of, like, you know, young adult slash new adult-y, because this is a little older type of romance. Like, you know, if I'm in, like, a lull of reading or something and I can't, like, you know, get into a book that I really want to read, I'll pick up, like, a Sarah Dessen type book and just, like, read it in an afternoon, and it gets my reading juices flowing. But this one was so cute, and I loved the college setting, and it was really refreshing. It wasn't a beach town for once, so I was into it. And yeah, I would definitely recommend buying it.
Okay. That just leaves me. I'm also going to say buy this book. I may have just gone and bought the rest of them because there's like a package deal on Kindle. And I think I'm probably going to want to know. So, yeah, there's 5 books and a couple novellas. Go look.
And I don't think she's quite done yet. There might be one more after the last one.
Yeah,
I don't know yet.
You guys can finish this podcast.
Like, I have things to do. I have to go. I really, really liked this book a lot. I liked it for a lot of reasons that I'm sure we're going to get into and talk about shortly. But I love the characters. I thought they were super fun and different, and they had a lot of depth to them, which isn't always the case when we're talking about a romance-y, you know, young adult, new adult novel. It's sometimes they can get a little lost along their way, and I didn't feel like that happened with these characters. I really enjoyed them a lot. And there's a lot to be said for the characters and how they're made and how they work. Just so everyone knows, Corey, in the novel, if you haven't read it, then what are you doing? You should not be listening to us until you read it. But for the rest of you, you know, she has a disability. She was injured playing hockey, and so she's in a wheelchair or on crutches most of the time with leg braces. And so the way that's portrayed throughout the story, though, is so cool. Like, it's not like a thing as much as you would think it would be. Does that make sense? I don't know if that makes sense, but in my head, it makes sense.
Serena does a good job of making it a challenge without making it like the thing that the book is about. Like, yeah. It's always kind of there, but it's not like the only thing that the story has to talk about.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, she has brown hair or she has blue hair or whatever. It's kind of like, this is just part of her. This is just who she is. And I loved that about this book a lot. And I love that it took it there because in so many books, you don't get the complicated dynamics sometimes that go along with those things. So I enjoyed that, and I enjoyed reading. It's a super quick read. And yeah, we'll talk about the characters more because there's a couple characters I really liked. But anyway, moving on. Let's move on before I get lost in that fact. So everyone should go buy the book. Hands down, we all agree, which is rare. We don't always agree. So this is kind of a big deal.
Yes. I consider that a victory, right?
Good job, Kristen. You won, Kristen. This was your big day. Very nicely done.
Well, when I suggested books for my first book, all of them got turned down. And that was just in the suggestion phase. So you did really well.
Yes.
They were like, well, we're not reading this. I was like, okay.
There was a couple I was willing to read.
I'm still going to suggest the island one.
All right, Brittany, your next book can take place on an island, okay?
Okay.
You can do it. We're going to go with it. All right, so let's talk about the setting. This book is set in college, at Harkness College, in Connecticut, which is super funny because I can already kind of pick out some of the colleges she may have used as the backdrop for Harkness College, because there are a ton of old, old colleges in Connecticut that are Ivy League and private, and I think I know which one she may have used as the descriptor for this college, because it does not actually exist as far as I know. So what did you guys think about Harkness and how it was set up and kind of the things that went on campus? Was that typical of your college experiences at all or not so much?
I think it was a little bit fancier than the college that I went to, but other than that, I thought it was really realistic, and she did a great job of kind of laying out the dynamic of the school, not only in how it's set up physically, but just how the different students interact with each other and the sort of like levels there are between the different students, which I think is really accurate to how college can be sometimes.
Yeah, it's definitely different from where I went to college. BGSU, go Falcons. My state university was a lot more modern, and they've kept up the older buildings, like they've installed elevators, and it's a lot more handicap friendly. Like, I mean, it's definitely doesn't have the challenges that Corey would had here. So it was a little harder for me to like consider all of the old buildings that, you know, have crazy staircases and stuff, but I've been to some older colleges, so, you know, it's not impossible.
Yes. I went to school the first time I went to college, because I've been a couple times. The first time I went to get my, like, undergrad degree, I went to an older university that had several buildings that weren't 100% handicap accessible, but they were working on it because it's a requirement. Like, you have to have it. But the dorm I lived in didn't have elevators in it. Like, so if you had to move in, it was awesome. Not really. And they were all old brick buildings. And so, I mean, I get it. Like, I get the feel of a small New England campus, which I think is what she was going for. And given that I've lived in New England, you know, my whole life and stuff, you visit your friends on campuses. And so this is a very typical New England campus design and setup with the old buildings and, you know, the stuff she described. So I thought that was really cool. The other stuff, like some of the things were cool, like as they kind of progress through and, you know, people are hanging out in each other's rooms and there are parties and those sort of things I thought were super typical. The thing that kind of stuck out to me as kind of odd was the acapella thing. Like, I've never.
No. That's a thing.
Yeah, no, we don't do that here.
Oh, yeah, no, we did that. Harkness was actually like really like my college, except on a much bigger scale. Mine was like, it was very old, and we had houses, like we had a housing system, and you're kind of in your house and you go to different common rooms and different areas of campus and you do things together and you kind of have healthy competitions with the other houses. Like when we get to the water polo, like that's how we played intramural sports, was between houses. Yeah, it was. We have those a cappella groups because my friends auditioned for them. I actually, my freshman year, waited with my friend for her to get her a cappella invite. Like, it was crazy reading this. I'm like, oh my God, this is just like freshman year of college, and it's so weird. And one of my friends also lived on the handicap floor. So they had a bigger room and it was more accessible, and it was like, you know, it was just awesome. But yeah, it's literally just like my college. And I pictured them like, you know, going to the concert in the common center, like where we used to, the college center where we used to go watch the a cappella concerts. Like, I could see it all so vividly taking place on my campus. It was crazy. Including down to like the shuttle buses. Like, I'm like, yeah, we have those too. Like, it was insane.
That's so crazy. No. Okay. Well, there you go. A cappella groups and that whole wedding thing, that exists. So
that's a real thing.
That's a thing. Yeah. I know. I
shout out to
that.
Sweetophilia for taking my friend into their
I love it.
We just had normal old auditions. I wish we would have had like a bid process where they come to your room. Like, that sounds like so much more fun than just like sitting in a room waiting for your name to be called.
That sounds incredibly stressful.
Yeah, I just like, I feel my anxiety rising already.
Yes.
Yeah, it was intense. And like the guys one was like really, really intense. They were called the Chessmen, and they were like a boy band on campus. Like they, on Valentine's Day, you could buy them and send them to your friends for like singing, you know, like singing grams. And it was like, if you got one, it was like a huge deal. And they all were like, they had the CD out and like, I have it. Don't worry about it. And, a cappella was like a thing. Like on Friday nights, like if an a cappella concert was happening, like you went out a little bit later that night. Like it was, it's, it was cool. It was, you know, it was awesome. So reading it here, I was like, I'm not the only one. All right.
All right, then. All right. So acapella is a thing. It happens. I like it. All right. So we kind of talked about the layouts of universities. I think in this book, there are challenges for both Corey and Hartley, because Hartley is in a wheel. Corey is in a wheelchair, and Hartley has his leg in a cast for the first 6 months of the novel, the first semester of school, essentially. And there are some serious challenges. If you think about getting across campus on crutches with, like, books, or, you know what I mean? Just any of that. Like, I've been on crutches. I despise crutches. Like, if I don't have to walk on them, I don't, because they're terrible and they hurt and they're uncomfortable. So if you think about trying to be independent on a college campus and having to get around, that's like a huge struggle on crutches. So I think the way she laid it out was a very realistic way. But I think one of the things that most universities have to do now is there has to be some level of, like, accessibility for, like, disabilities and stuff. So I think she was, I don't know, what do you guys think about how the setting played into the challenges for Corey and Hartley?
Well, I think this, using an older college that wasn't readily accessible, like, clearly this is not something that they've had to deal with, you know, with the affluence that Harkness tends to pull in. They've never really dealt with a lot of handicap or people that need assistance. So I thought it was really, really smart that was a challenge that both Hartley and Corey had to overcome, because it brought them together in a way that just them being roommates or living nearby each other wouldn't have done. Like, because they both had this one class together, and they both had to struggle through getting upstairs to the dining hall, and they both had, you know, like, there were things that, because the college was not up to, like, a standard for accessibility, there were things they had to kind of rely on each other for. And that, I think, helped lay the groundwork for what becomes a really, really adorable relationship later on.
Yes, indeedy. All right, so let's move on and talk about these characters, because we haven't really done that yet. So Corey is our lead female character. She is a freshman. She is disabled to some extent. She was in an accident that caused her to not be able to feel one foot and then up to the knee on her other leg, I think it was. And so she's kind of like a champ throughout this whole thing, because this doesn't define who she is in so many ways. Like, oftentimes when you enter a story like this, you enter the story through the lead character's perspective, and it's all about them, like, having a pity party for themselves or something to that effect. Like, usually that's where you start, and then you see the growth and the change. Whereas this is, Corey's like, get me out of my parents' house in Wisconsin. They're driving me bonkers. I need to move on. I need to be independent. I need to be on my own. And so she's a very different kind of character, I think, and she's stronger for it. And at the same time, there are still some weaknesses that she has, as we learn throughout the story. And there's some things that are really challenging for her that she doesn't always show or talk about. So how did you guys feel about Corey as one of our main narrators?
Well, I like that you said that we come into the story without, like, you know, her being, like, having a pity party or anything. And I think that was such a strong character trait for her, especially because this all took place less than a year ago. Like, her accident was less than, like, she is still learning how to use her wheelchair and learning how to do all this stuff. And I never once felt like she was like, oh, my, woe is me, or oh, my life. Like, she was just such a strong character right out the gate. And to learn that all of this is new to her, as well as, like, her family and everything, was just, like, so interesting to watch develop. And then she kind of meets this guy who's like, you're going to get better, but never once is she's like, well, you know, you'll move on and I won't. And it was just really interesting to read, and you kind of forgot about it after a while, because she is so content and doesn't let things rattle her so much, that, like, you fell in love with her love story rather than her, like, tragic story. So I thought that was really, really well written.
Yeah, and my favorite thing about Corey's situation is that it is sort of permanent. I mean, maybe, like, really, really far down the road, with lots of physical therapy, maybe she'll end up getting, you know, feeling back and stuff. But it wasn't as easily solved as Hartley's was. I mean, you know, his leg was broken, whatever, like he had to be in a cast and it sucked, definitely, but he was going to get better. And the fact that it wasn't this poof kind of solution to her problem was really important to me, because you don't see a lot of disabled characters in books. And even if they happen to be on crutches, it's only temporary. So I really like how she handled that whole situation and brought attention to the fact that life is so difficult for people with disabilities. And yet she didn't, that wasn't the story. Like, it was an issue, but it wasn't the issue. And she talked a lot about the emotions that Corey was going through as a result of other things as well. And I really liked, you know, Hartley, obviously, for looking past any sort of physical disability and, you know, falling in love with the girl instead. And it was just, the whole story was handled really well, and I was really impressed by it.
Yeah, I was going to say, clearly I love Corey, as I was like, everybody needs to read this book. I think my favorite trait or thing, like, Corey is not a complainer, and I love that she calls herself out every time she thinks she's starting to whine, because I have a tendency to be a whiner, and in the last couple of years, like, I've really tried to, like, call myself out on it. Like, you don't need to be whining about this. There's so many other things you could do right now. Like, yeah. And in this book, like, seeing this girl who went from, you know, playing hockey and living a normal girl's life and not thinking about all of the challenges that she now has to think about on a daily basis, like, even despite all of those new challenges in her life, she still is like, I don't need to be whining. Like, you know, it could be worse. She met all of these people and read all of these horror stories about quadriplegics and all of that while she was healing, that she knows how much worse it could be for her. And even in her pretty awful, you know, it's not a great situation, is able to say, I don't need to be whining. Let's, you know, kind of pulls herself up by her bootstraps. And I just love that about Corey. Like, she's so resilient. It's amazing.
Yeah, I did. I loved so many things about her. I also liked her wit. Like, she never took anything quite too seriously or too personally, and she always kind of just rolled with it. So I liked that about her as well. All right, let's talk a little bit about Dana, who is Corey's roommate. And now, I don't know about you guys, but, like, when you get a roommate in college, that is probably the most stressful initial thing that you go through as a freshman in college. Did you guys feel that way?
Yeah. Like, yeah. You stress out over who this person is.
My roommate was a nightmare. Yeah. I'll get into that later.
I loved my first roommate.
Oh, my gosh. So nice. My roommate was the best. She's still the best.
Yeah. Oh, damn lucky girls. No, I had a crazy roommate. And then after that, I had a single because I couldn't take it anymore.
See, I was really lucky because I got to room with my best friend for 4 years. Aww. We went to the same college, and yeah, it was amazing. So I do not have any horror stories about roommates.
Well, anyway, all right. So luckily, Corey doesn't have any horror stories about her roommates either, because her roommate is Dana. And Dana's this really cool girl. Like, she's also has a really cool backstory. Her dad is a businessman in Japan, so that's where she's lived. She came back stateside to attend college. So she's this really just chill kind of girl. And she clearly has a lot going for her, and she's clearly affluent. But you never really know that from her. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's very down to earth and mellow, and I don't know. I always liked that about her character, because sometimes people are different when they come from different backgrounds, but she was very, I liked how good she was with Corey, and I liked how she had, you know, she was nervous about things too that were just different, and then she always, like, she was the one that was going for the a cappella group, and, like, the whole scene about her waiting and stuff I thought was really cute. So what do you guys think about Dana?
I love when Dana and Corey, like, first see each other, and Corey, like, rolls in her wheelchair and is like, how did you recognize me? And Dana's like, Facebook, duh. I'm like, that's the perfect roommate. Like, there's the obvious, like the wheelchairs, you know, portion of things. And she knows to like leave that out of it. And it just, from that moment on, I was like, okay, this Dana chick's going to be cool.
Absolutely. Did you guys, Karen or Brittany, do you guys have any thoughts about Dana?
I really liked her. I like that she didn't push Corey to do anything she didn't want to do, but was also like, no, you know yourself. Like, she could recognize when Corey was being, like, you know, retreating into herself and, like, really made her step outside her comfort zone with things. And, like, she was the perfect person to have around for this whole Hartley thing because she didn't pry, but she was also like, listen, it's written all over your face. You better pull yourself together.
yeah.
And I loved her for that. She reminded me a lot of my freshman year roommate because my roommate was like born in South Africa. Her dad was a diplomat. So like she's been everywhere in the world. And that's kind of like how Dana was. Like she has like this huge, like extravagant life. But at the same time, she's so down to earth. Like my roommate would just get excited about like the frozen yogurt machine in the dining hall, like and where we were going to sit. And like she never talked about anything, like all these things that she's done or whatever. She was just sort of like, let's go to the thrift store now. And I'm like, OK, like she's just she's so cool. And I was like, yes, Dana is just like my roommate. I think that's really why I vibed with this book so well is because the college was like my school and Dana was like my freshman year roommate. It was just I didn't have a hot disabled hockey player living across the hall from me, though. So.
That's
dang it.
Karen, do you have any thoughts on Dana before I move on?
Yeah, I mean, I basically feel the same way. I thought she was really cool. Like you were saying, she was really chilled, down to earth. I was really worried when we first met her that she was going to have a problem with Corey and that it was going to be awkward and she was going to be disappointed. And I was like, please don't let that happen. And it didn't. And it was totally fine the entire book. And I was like, yes, a lot of, you know, positive thoughts and experiences around this person who has a disability. And it was really refreshing.
Awesome. All right. Let's get on to maybe one of our favorite topics, Hartley. Kristen, I'm gonna let you go ahead. This is your book. I will let you discuss Hartley.
Oh, Hartley. Hartley is a hockey player who, being the genius he is, gets himself drunk and decides to climb a like climbing wall at training camp and breaks his leg in two places. So, of course, Hartley then gets moved to the handicap accessible wing of the one McHaren dorm. And he ends up living across the room from Corey and Dana. And he's a very special duck. I love that.
I like how you put that.
He is. He's a very special duck. Like, the most, I've read a lot of sports romance and a lot of romance novels that have athletes and whatnot. And more often than not, when the guy is the athlete, he's some sort of player or some sort of like, you know, he's this slick guy. And I like that Hartley really isn't. He has a girlfriend when the novel starts. Her name is Stacia. I'm sure we'll get to her in a minute.
Oh, she's next. Don't worry.
Yeah. And you don't, he's not one of those guys. Like, he doesn't seem like he's the kind, like, Bridger, who we will also talk about, who, you know, he has a girlfriend. He is pretty true to that girlfriend throughout the novel until he doesn't need to be anymore. And so he's a little bit different. And I think I really respect that the most about him is that he's not just the typical college athlete guy. He has a little more respect for himself. And yeah, and I really, really love like how his and Corey's friendship begins and kind of snowballs from there.
Yeah, can I tell you, I love the way Dana describes him as being, there's a good Hartley and there's an evil Hartley. And there are these two very distinct people. And he's one way sometimes when he's with Corey. And then yeah, there's this other time when he's with these other people and he's this other Hartley completely. I love that description of her because you see it a little bit more clearly. Because typically you only see Hartley, I mean, the story is broken up into multiple perspectives. So you see Hartley's perspective and you see Corey's perspective. But for the most time, like when you're inside Hartley's head, you kind of get one idea of him, but then you only ever see him through Corey's eyes, which is a very different perspective, and a very almost positive, overly positive perspective because you know she, how she feels for him. And so when you get Dana being like, listen, and I think those are always really good moments because you get a better, like a more complete picture, not just this flip-flop of point of view, but someone else's perspective outside the little insular bubble of that like moment. So I thought that was really cool. Karen, Brittany, do you have thoughts on Hartley?
Hartley's very nice. he's I agree. I think that he is such an interesting character because he isn't that typical jock. You kind of imagine him to be at first, and then you feel that there are all of these different layers. And I just love at first that he was so into just being Corey's friend. And even that in and of itself, the friendship that they have between each other was great. And I think their eventual romantic relationship developed so organically. I mean, obviously, they had a lot in common, a lot more than he had with his girlfriend, and that kind of snowballed, and I think that it really couldn't have ended up any other way, and I'm so glad. I mean, obviously, when you read romance novels, you kind of know, you know, the couple's going to get together in the end unless it's like a horrible, tragic kind of book, but the way that it ended up developing is why you read the story. And I think she did it so well. It didn't feel rushed. It didn't feel like, oh, these people met and fell in love in 3 days and then, you know, they're going to live happily ever after. It was a little bit of a struggle. And I think that's just true to real life. And it was refreshing.
Yeah. And going off of that, like they really played up the fact that when you're in college, like you're seeing these people constantly, like there is no break, like you can't even like go to the bathroom without seeing these people. So it's like the fact that they live across the hall from each other was really convenient for like they'll notice when you're not at a meal and they'll notice when you don't go to class, and they notice a lot more than let's say if you were in high school and trying to like, you know, there's those whole like 15 hours a day where you're not with these people. But here you're with them all the time and there's no limitation of like when you have to leave the room and when you don't have to leave the room. But Hartley, being a Patriots fan, I immediately messaged Jen as soon as I read that line. And I was just like, our boy is a Patriots fan, so sold. Don't care what he does. He's the best.
If I ever come across a Lions fan in a book, my heart will go to that like that character forever. It's just never going to happen.
Yeah, that's a little different, I guess. All right, let's talk about it. Let's talk about Stacia. Anyone have any strong opinions about her?
Yes, but not ones I can air.
That's what, I'm like, what words can I use that won't be inappropriate? And I don't have a lot of them. So Stacia is a rich girl. She comes from Greenwich, Connecticut. For those of you who aren't familiar, it's an incredibly rich area right over the New York line, right over the Connecticut line, right next to New York. Lots of movie stars own houses there. Very, very wealthy. And Stacia is very, very wealthy. And I don't like the way she treats Hartley. But he allows it, so that's his fault too. It's kind of a two-way street right there. She very much is... I'm trying to think of, like, a movie reference where you can, like, think of that girl. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know. Okay, did anyone ever see... was it She's All That? That had Freddie Prinze Jr. in it?
Yeah. Has ever seen that? The makeover.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, yeah. So his girlfriend in that movie, Freddie, the guy who did the makeover, his like girlfriend that like randomly broke up with him and then once again, that's who she reminds me of.
Yeah, it's literally like that in every other 90s movie.
Yeah, that's true.
It's there's always that like one girl.
There's that girl. Yeah. So she's that girl.
We're gonna worse than that girl.
she's not nice on so many levels. Ugh. Anyway, but Hartley has an issue because he just can't quit her. So it becomes challenging for him once things start to happen and he spends more time with Corey. And I think the really interesting part, the way this book's set up, is that we meet, you know, Corey and Hartley meet, and Stacy is there. But Stacia leaves the next day for Paris for the semester, essentially. So that sets up a lot of downtime for Hartley, who's injured and can't play hockey and all these other things. And so I think it sets up a really interesting dynamic within the first semester for Corey and for Hartley, and then, you know, Stacey returns, and that sets up a whole different dynamic. So, yeah, I just don't like her. Any other thoughts on her other than we don't like her?
I think it's sort of brilliant the way Serena wrote her, because there is nothing likable about Stacia. Like, you're not supposed to find any redeeming quality to her. Like, we even go to her house and, like, through Hartley's eyes, like, we see her house and meet her parents, and you're still just like, wow. Like, this girl is just not, like, she might be right for someone else in the universe, but Hartley needs to stay away. Like, you immediately just are turned off to everything that Stacia is and says and does. So, yeah, she's just basically the, you know, she's the Wicked Witch of the West, and you just don't want her anywhere near you.
And the sad part is there are really people in the world like this? Like, I've run into them. Like, I've come across them. This is not a total fictional character. People exist in the world like this, and that's what's so sad, I think. You're like, I wish it were just fiction. Because nobody should have to deal with her. You know, it's terrible. Mm-hmm. Anyway. All right. Let's talk about one of my other favorite characters, Bridger.
Bridger.
I loved him. Yes, he is a player, ladies. You do not want to get involved with Bridger. Because, let's be real. But, here's the thing. He is a player in the fact that you know going into it that he's a player. There is no questioning what his feelings are. Straight up in front of your face, you know what they are. There's no romance about it. So, in that regard, he's not that horrible. I mean, he's horrible. His choices aren't great, but it's just not, it's not the same as if a guy, like, intentionally plays you, or, you know, he's upfront with you. So, I don't know. And there's something very sweet about Bridger. He takes care of his little sister, and there's a lot going on at home for him, and he's incredibly smart. You would never, like, the way he's written in a way, you wouldn't necessarily know it or think it until you got more information from Hartley, but Bridger's really quite brilliant. So, I liked him. I enjoyed his character. Thoughts?
Yeah, I love that Bridger, while a really decent human being, thank God, is kind of there to make Hartley seem, like, better. Like, without Bridger, Hartley would still kind of seem like a little bit of a womanizer. Not that he is at all, but, like, when you compare him to Bridger and everything that Bridger kind of represents, he is that typical jock in college. He's the one who doesn't really want a relationship and is just, he's cool with just sleeping around and whatever chick is around that night. And because of that, it makes Hartley look that much more like he kind of elevates Hartley a little bit. And I love Bridger all on his own, especially in the second book in this series where you get to know Bridger very, very well. But yeah, I love Bridger all on his own, and he's a really great, really layered character. So much love.
When we first met Bridger, I basically felt the same way. I didn't dislike him or anything, but I was like, really? This dude? And then you read his book, and then you get it. So I don't really want to say too much, but I will say, like, if you liked this book, go read his, because it paints a more three-dimensional picture of his character. And it's amazing. It's really impressive what she's done with it. And you can kind of understand everything that he's going through. And I also, Jen, love the fact that, yeah, you know, he's a bit of a player, but you know that going in, and he's still brilliant. Like, it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. Like, he can still be this amazing person, but maybe he has some bad habits.
He's a little flawed, and who doesn't love a good flawed character? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's something about the flaws of a character that make them whole, that make them exactly who they should be, and I think that's what it is about Bridger. Like, yes, he is flawed. He makes really bad choices in some cases. He's, you know, he's a man whore, whatever, but he accepts that fact about himself, and he's not, you know, it's not necessarily, like, a big boastful thing. It just is what it is. And he owns it. But then you see these moments, and I haven't read his book yet, but I clearly have it already purchased, so that'll be my next read. But you see this moment, especially when he's with his little sister, and you're like, what on earth? There's just something so different about the dichotomy of his character in those two situations, and you're like, there's something more there. And then you learn about how smart he is and how hard he works. And so it's pretty cool. I like that about him.
Okay. Well, there are a lot of little characters in this novel. We could probably talk for days about all of the little ones. Like, I love Daniel and Allison, who are, you know, you meet later in the book and all that. But the last two major sections, I would say, would be Corey's family and Hartley's family. And let's start with Corey's family, because you don't see a lot of them. You meet her mom and her dad on move-in day. And I think the most important thing to, like, note about Corey's family is that they're really supportive. And while all of this has happened and, you know, it could be just absolutely nothing but tragedy to a family, her parents have done everything they can to like, build Corey up and to make sure that she gets to do the things she wants to do despite her new limitations. And like, nothing, there's no part of this book I love more than when she gets home for Christmas break. Actually, I mean, there's a lot of parts I love more, but I love the part where she goes home for Christmas break and her parents are sitting there and she starts talking about Real Sticks, this hockey game she plays at school, and her dad like runs out to get the game system, brings it home, and they play. Like, hockey was this thing that they had, her and her dad, and when after her accident, like, it became persona non grata, like, I don't want to talk about this, like, no. And to kind of see their relationship mend and all of that was really, really special. Does anybody have anything else they wanted to say about
her? Can I say I love her brother? Because her brother also went to Harkness, and her brother used to play in the hockey team. So Hartley and Bridger, they all know her brother, and her brother knows them. So there's this other kind of level that's a little bit different about it too, because everyone has, like, if you've all, like, seen the, like, typical older brother, like, don't go near that boy, he's bad for you. Like, tell me you're not, you know, dating that boy. Like, there's something, and, you know, Damien has that quality about him a little bit. So I thought that was really cool when she had that Skype conversation with him and Hartley was sitting right next to her and he's like, whoa, what's going on right now? So I thought that was really fun, too. I liked him. I did think her parents, especially her mom, was a little overbearing. Yes, they tried to do a lot of things for her, but I think there were points where I felt as frustrated as Corey did because, oh, my God, take a breath.
Like, yeah.
So those moments really kind of came through for me that, you know, while, you know, this was a family tragedy, and yes, the family could have looked at it a completely different way, the way they looked at it still was a little too pushy in some ways. Like, it's a little much. Like, when you turn 18, it's one thing, you know, it's difficult enough, I think, when you turn 18, because you're technically an adult. You can make choices that your parents can't really say anything about anymore. But when you're 18 and you've just been, you know, handicapped, you know, and now you're bound to a wheelchair with crutches and braces and whatever, that's a whole nother level. Any choice that you had at being 18 has been taken away from you in a lot of ways, and now you have different choices. And now you have this family unit that wants to kind of protect and coddle you, and, oh my God, this has happened, and how are we going to cope with this? And they didn't want to let her go away. I mean, she grew up in Wisconsin, and they wanted to keep her in Wisconsin. They made that very clear. So I think it's really interesting kind of how that continues to play out with the family dynamic in that respect as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, it informs a lot of who Corey is now and how she does things and handles things that you wouldn't know that if you didn't meet her family. So, yeah, it is really important that we get that first picture of where she comes from. The only other, like, major family is Hartley's family, which is just him and his mom until the very end of the novel where you get to meet Hartley's dad. But I thought we'd take a second and just talk about his mother. She's the sweetest lady, and I love that she hates Stacia with every fiber of her being.
Yeah,
like, that's her most redeeming quality. Like, you have to love the woman because she invites all of his friends back for Thanksgiving and is, like, happy to have whoever wants to come and is just, you know, she's incredibly inviting. And then you find out that the only person she doesn't get along with is Stacia, and you're like, yep, I knew I liked her.
Well, and I think a lot of that has to do with her background. You know, she works retail, so it's Thanksgiving and she's got to go to work at midnight so that everyone can get their Black Friday shopping in. And then you have Stacia, who comes from such a vastly different place, who can't be asked because she has servants, kind of thing. And so it's a very different world, and trying to blend the two when you have someone who's so overly privileged and lives for the privilege and doesn't think about what it looks like to anybody else. And then you have somebody who works really, really hard. You know, you've got those, it's so different that the two aren't going to meet unless someone's willing to bend. And Stacia is not willing to bend.
Yeah. And then toward the end of the book, you meet Hartley's father and you learn the story of Hartley's mother and father. And it all becomes like crystal clear as to why his mom is not a huge fan of Stacia. And like his dad, you don't really get to know his dad, so there's not a whole lot to talk about. But even he, with the choices he's made that are very questionable, even he is not a total monster. Like, you, by the end of this book, you feel bad for the situation that Hartley and his mom have been in, and you kind of understand where his dad is coming from, and you're ready to like see things be better for them, and you can see that the future hopefully will be better for all the parties involved. So it's a very interesting dynamic for Hartley's family and the Stacia issue as well.
That's how I felt coming into the end, because it's like this dude shows up and you're like, how is this going to go? I don't know how I feel about this. And then you find out that, yeah, he's not a complete monster. Maybe he didn't make the best choices, but, you know, that's on him and he's trying to come to terms with that. And you feel for Hartley because you understand that he wants a relationship with his father, but isn't willing to be completely vulnerable around him. And I think seeing that positive relationship slowly build up is extremely realistic, because, you know, these things happen, and just because a parent like walked out doesn't mean eventually they're not gonna see the error of their ways. And I thought it was really different that in the end you kind of get somewhat of a resolution to that story.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it to be tied up as neatly as it was, but I'm glad that it showed a little bit of how Hartley's mom sort of made her life work without having that father figure there, and she was not looking for anything in return, the same thing as Hartley was not looking for anything in return from this guy who he kind of like used his girlfriend to like spy on, which I thought was like really, really interesting and funny, considering how heavy of a plot line this was. Yeah, I really liked the way they constructed the whole dad thing, and it didn't feel cheap to me that he showed up at the end, or that like they used him as like, you know, this big like figure in, you know, pop culture. Like, people know who he is. It's not like, you know, it's a big thing and he's not going to make it into a bigger thing than it needs to be. It's a very private matter, and I think that shows a lot about how what Hartley's like, and it makes you trust him a little bit more, because he could exploit this and like show a different side of himself, but he didn't.
All right, so let's talk a little bit, you know, this is a romance novel and all. So let's talk a little bit about the romance throughout this novel. We have, you know, Hartley and Corey kind of meeting on the first day. As we said, Hartley's dating Stacia through that part. So they meet and they become kind of fast friends. And he's very, I'm trying to think of how Corey explains him. He doesn't get embarrassed. Like, he doesn't care. He truly just doesn't, there's very limit, you know, he's kind of shameless in that regard. And so they kind of hit it off really well, because he's willing to push her about things that she's not always willing to talk about with everybody else, and kind of like do that sort of thing. So they have this really solid friendship where he comes over and plays this hockey game with her, and he kind of slowly discovers that she was a hockey player, and, you know, these are the things that have happened to her, and this, you know, how her life has changed in 9 months, which isn't a very long time to adjust. So what did you guys think about that whole beginning part where it was just the Hartley and Corey friendship show?
I live for that kind of stuff because whenever you get to, like, whenever you read these books sometimes, I shouldn't say all the time, but, or watch romance movies, it's always this love at first sight kind of thing where it's a very physical attraction, and then throughout the story they kind of come to realize that, yay, you know, they're soulmates or whatever. And this felt, like I said before, very organic. They were friends first. They discovered how much they had in common, and they realized that they were very good friends. And then they realized, oh, wait, maybe this can become more and not necessarily ruin what we have now. And I think that's a much more realistic portrayal of how relationships usually go. And it was really nice to see that slow burn, which I usually live for.
Yeah, I could read just an entire, like, you know, short story collection of just meet cutes and be completely satisfied. Like, I don't need the resolution at the end. Yeah, but this story, especially with, like, you know, you just leave your door open that first week of college, and, like, that's how you make some of your closest friends. All of my friends lived on my hall. And the ones I still stay in touch with, we all lived in the same building in college. And that's how we met, was because our doors were open. Someone had a TV. I became friends with the person across the hall from me because we wanted to watch, you know, John and Kate plus 8. And I had a TV. So that's what we did. So, I mean, like, that's just – and another friend, like, she was like, oh, you watch Grey's Anatomy? I watch Grey's Anatomy. I'll come down on Thursday nights and we'll watch it. Like, that's just how things happen. And I really loved that – this friendship, like, sprung up like that. Like, oh, you have a TV, mind if I play this hockey game in here? And we'll just start chatting about other things while we're, you know, bonding over something that we have a common interest in. So yeah, I loved the meet cute. It felt so, like, organic, and it just developed so naturally. And, you know, Corey's constantly aware that there's this other girl because we've met her within, like she's been there. It's not like she's imagining this figure the whole time. She's actually physically met Stacia. So I thought it was such a well-built relationship.
Yes. And yeah. You always – oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think my favorite part about their, like – relationship in the beginning is that they have hockey in common, and she knows it from the get-go. Like, she finds out that he's a hockey player right away, and she doesn't necessarily let it out that she knows and loves it, but as they, like, start hanging out and they go to meals together and they help each other in the dining hall, and then they start playing real sticks, and, you know, she kind of lets on that she knows more about this. And I love that whole thing, because it's not something, especially since it's the, like, where her injury came from, like, it's not something she wants to talk about or, like, volunteer, but, like, she gets him a little better because she does know about this thing that informs a lot of his life. And, like, hockey is not just, you know, this little thing he does on the side. Like, he lives and breathes it. He plays on the team. It's, you know, it's a thing. So I really love that part of their, like, slow build, is that she, you know, slowly kind of lets him in to know more about her past and everything that happened.
Yeah, I like the idea that, like, Corey always kind of, like, initially Corey thinks that he's beautiful, and she kind of just leaves it at that. But as they do hang out and they meet and stuff, her feelings become much more real. And we hear a lot about her feelings when we're in her POV. We don't necessarily get a real clear picture from Hartley on what his feelings are until much later. It's a very twisty kind of path for him. Primarily, I mean, he does have this girlfriend. And, okay, let's talk about the girlfriend, because we didn't bring up this aspect of Stacia. When Bridger is talking to Hartley this one time, we learn that basically Stacia is basically seeing someone else while she's abroad. Like, that's happening. And it's blatant because it's all over her Facebook page. And so Bridger brings it up, and Hartley's like, well, you know, we can see other people. It is what it is, kind of thing. And Bridger's like, but you're not seeing someone else, and you're not hooking up with other people. And he's like, well, you know, that's not my deal. And so I thought that was a really interesting kind of character quirk about him, because that's not a typical guy thing. They're not going to let a girl go out and basically mess around behind their back and not, you know, take advantage of that. You know what I mean? I thought that was such an odd telling thing about him. And then, you know, as we kind of get closer, she's supposed to come back, but she's not always reliable. So she's supposed to come back for his birthday, which is kind of a big night. And she stands him up. And so he, and this is where it gets complicated. Because this is this yeah. is maybe the one part where I was a little angry with Hartley. A little.
As I think you're supposed to be.
Yeah, like it felt a little contrived for me and I was not happy.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, so let's tell you what he did, in case you forgot that part. So he gets mad. Stacia stands him up. Essentially, she's with the guy that she's been seeing the whole time in Paris. So he goes over to hang out with Corey. And Corey's fully aware that it's his birthday, that Stacia is supposed to be back. There were comments about crazy wild sex. So she's kind of like, I'm turning up my TV really loud. I'm going to hibernate. I'm going to pretend I don't know anything that's going on next door. And so he comes over to see her, and she's like, And so she realizes that Stacia has set him up, or stood him up. And so they are watching The Princess Bride, which is totally cool, except he starts to get more friendly than he ever has with her. And so he kind of pushes the boundaries of their friendship. And part of you wants to be, well, that's cool, you finally realized you're dating an idiot, and you like this girl, and you want to date her. But at the same time, I think the overwhelming feeling is, well, you're an ass, you don't have a girl in your bed, so you're going to go to the next best thing and ruin it? Like, I'm confused. I don't know. How did you guys feel about that part?
I was gonna say, most of my frustration came in that, like, he knows, you're aware that he kind of gets that Corey might have more feelings for him than he has shown her. Like, it's clear that she's got a little crush. And it's almost like he's taking advantage of her in this little interlude between them. Like, it doesn't quite sit right with you. Like, you want to believe that, yeah, Stacy has been messing around on him for months, and, you know, it's not like you try and excuse away the fact that he is cheating on his girlfriend, and that he's cheating on her with this girl who thinks the world of Hartley, and when you take into account the conversation that they have a couple of weeks before about whether or not Corey is actually able to feel sex the way everyone else does, and, you know, like, all of the physical aspects of it, like, you know that this means a lot for Corey. So knowing all of that, and he still just stumbles, you know, into her room, and they get a little drunk on champagne, and it's like, the whole time you're like, I want this to happen for them, but I also just, there's this thing about it that you can't quite sit right with. Like, it's just not quite right. And I think you're supposed to kind of feel that way, but it's still just, there's something about it, you know?
Karen or Brittany, any feelings on that situation?
I mean, I agree. I wanted it to happen because I was like, yes, these two need to hook up. But at the same time, I was like, oh, well, at least he started drinking, like, you know, while it wasn't like he went out, got trashed, and then did this. You know what I mean? Like, it was very like, I'm going to play my odds here. I realize that I have this huge situation to take care of down the line, but why not see where this is right now? Like, he did know where Corey's mind was at. But I think he also knew where his mind was at and could see the next logical, like, you know, five or six steps that needed to be taken, but he couldn't act on it just yet. Like, it had to wait. And he just kind of jumped the gun a bit. But I don't think it was as bad as some other, like, you know, books like this that I've read where I'm like, oh, you're in a lot of trouble. This one, I felt like it was like, okay, Corey's smart enough to realize what is happening. Yes, her heart's going to get involved a little bit deeper than perhaps Hartley's is, but maybe we'll get a chapter or two where we're like, even if it was just like a chapter that said, Hartley, oh shit, and then it went back to Corey. Like, you know.
I would have liked that.
I thought that would have been like, yes, you're getting a little bit more insight into how Hartley's feeling, but yeah, I felt that it was just like, that was the time that it had to happen, and it did.
I think I would have felt better about it if the next day he wasn't making out with Stacia in the middle of the dining hall.
Yes.
Yeah. I would have felt much better about it. And that was the moment where Dana was like, evil Hartley. Because she knew what happened between them. Like, she figured it out because, well, she's Dana. And so, like, she knows, and she knows that Corey has a lot of feelings for him. Like, it's pretty obvious, I think, to anyone that probably hangs out with them that she's a little more emotionally attached. And so the way he behaved in the dining hall was so, and it didn't even feel like him. If you guys, like, if you really read what he's saying and what's going on at that time, it doesn't feel like him at all. Not the Hartley that talks to Corey all the time. That's a completely different boy, and Dana was very right about that. So, and then there was a lot of emotionality on Hartley's part after everything went down with Corey. And so I thought that was really interesting because while he still has Stacia and there's these things going on, there is some attachment to Corey that I don't think he was expecting after that encounter.
Oh, okay. Sorry. That's me. So basically, after this scene, more or less, they leave for Christmas break, they go home, and Corey has a lot of things to deal with post hanging out with Hartley, hooking up with Hartley. Like, she has to kind of make a choice. And you see her making this choice to say, I'm going to try and do my best in second semester to put Hartley behind me. Like, he's my friend, and that's cool, and, you know, she's not going to ignore him, but she's going to do her best to put herself out there and to do more things. So part of that is joining the intramural water polo team, which is awesome. And we'll get into that. But, like, second semester really is Corey's operation Forget About Hartley. And it's so hard reading these chapters because you just want more of Corey and Hartley, whether they're friends or not. Like, you want to see them together and, like, all of that. And more of these chapters is just Corey trying to do things that don't involve him. And it just, it's so hard. I love the book and I love every part of it, but those few chapters every time are hard for me to not just, like, skip in my rereads because I just want to get to the good stuff.
Yeah, when she transfers out of their econ class, I was like, oh, well, where does that leave us? Like, we can't even have awkward, like, supply and demand conversations anymore. And that kind of changes the whole trajectory of everything else, like, especially, like, their lunch schedule, like, and you see it kind of, like, slowly crushing Hartley a little bit. And when they were on break, he did call her on New Year's Eve because he was with Stacia, but she was an hour behind him, so she was able to, you know, he was able to call her at midnight her time and not, like, affect his relationship, I guess. And so that moment was cute. I'm like, okay, great, they're gonna come back, they're gonna, like, see each other for the first time, everything's gonna be, like, you know, it's gonna be okay. But then she kind of, like, retreats into herself in one respect, but then, like you were saying, she joins the water polo team, and I thought that was, like, the greatest thing ever. I was like, that is so perfect for her, and, like, she could get her aggression out and she can make new friends, and, like, you know, she had, like, all these other people that she had to prove to that, like, you know, she was stronger than she is, and it kind of, like, gave her this confidence boost, and it's presented, like, this whole other thing where, like, she's walking out of the, I forget where she was, where were they, her and Daniel?
ice cream parlor.
They were walking out, her and, like, the captain of her house's water polo team were leaving. They got ice cream after a scrimmage and they were leaving, and Hartley, like, walks into her and she's just like, oh, no big deal, by the way, this is Daniel, okay, bye. And he's, like, British and great, and I was like, this is so good. I'm like, you stick, like, to him, Corey.
Like, if you want to make the guy jealous, you go with the really hot British guy who plays water polo with you.
I know,
like, who you, she's, like, not even trying.
Yeah, but who your first encounter was, like, half naked because you're in bathing suits. Like,
right? Come on. Yeah.
So great. I actually enjoyed those chapters. As heartbreaking as they were, and I really wanted it to be resolved. I love the, like, the big fight and then the aftermath chapters of these books so much. And I thought that this one was just, it was so great. All the little, like, that could be seen as being unintentional, and they kind of were unintentional actions on Corey's part, were just so perfectly timed and planned to the point where, like, once Hartley has to finally come to her rescue, it was just perfect.
I really loved the water polo parts because I felt that it was so important that Corey branch out from Hartley and his circle of friends and have her own circle of friends and her own things to do by herself. I think that was really good for her mentality when she's trying to figure out, you know, where exactly they stand with each other. But anytime when you're in a relationship, you know, some of these stories are written in a way that these people kind of drop their friends and drop their own interests and mold themselves to the other person. And she did sort of the opposite of that. She became more independent when she realized she was going down this track where, you know, she was kind of isolating herself in a lot of ways. And water polo, like you were saying, is absolutely perfect for her. And that's one of my favorite chapters. And it was really nice seeing the author write her becoming more independent the further entangled she got with Hartley. You know, whether or not they were getting together at that point, they were becoming closer, even if they didn't necessarily want to. And the fact that she wrote her becoming more independent and doing things that scared her a little bit was really important, not only to the story, her relationship, but also her character as somebody who's recently disabled.
Yeah, no, like, absolutely. And from the water polo, we move into this post their first game against Turner House tie. They have this little celebration, and Corey gets herself good and drunk and has no way to get downstairs or get to the bathroom because she's, like, stranded on this couch. And who shows up to save the day but Hartley? And I can't even tell you how much I love the fact that she's sitting there, like, trying to figure out how she's going to get herself out of this mess because the guy who carried her upstairs is falling down drunk. And before she can make a move, she looks at the door and he's, like, just standing there.
It's one of those really big moments, like, in a movie, that moment you wait for after all the big fights and stuff. It works.
So he rescues her. He saves the day. And this doesn't go over well with Stacia, who doesn't understand why he needs to help his friend. And so, you know, he basically says, "Stacia, I'll be back. We have some stuff to talk about." And he escorts Corey home, which, you know, there's not a whole lot that happens until the next morning when you find out at brunch when Corey's sitting with Allison and Daniel and Dana that there were some fireworks the night before after Corey left the party. And Stacia and Hartley are no more. And she was kind of, like, brutal. And as much as, like, you've waited the entire book for this, you've waited the entire book for Hartley to kind of, like, get a clue, I don't think it could have been better. Like, the way he kind of arrives at the table, sees that she, like, needs some Advil for her hangover, and then plants one on her and is like, "We've got plans tonight."
I was a little like, okay, this is a little fast for even me, who wants this to accelerate as quickly as possible. But I thought that that moment was so cute because there was no room for, like, that awkward chapter where it's like, "Oh, I was such an idiot last night." Like, that moment happens, but it's so brief. And she doesn't have time to be, like, worrying about when she's going to see Hartley next, or, like, what is she going to say, or what did he mean when he just said, like, "Let's hang out later," or "We need to talk later." There weren't those, like, that lull of waiting. He just, like, went for it. And I thought that that was, like, such a welcome change to everything else that I've read. And I loved that she just went with it, and she didn't really have time to, like, let her heart and her head catch up, which was really cool. And I guess I was a little concerned in that moment that he did not finish taking care of business with Stacia. Like, I thought she was going to come back and, like, it was going to be this whole big blowout. And I was really nervous about that for a while. Like, she was going to interrupt their date and it was going to be this big mess. And Corey was going to end up getting hurt because Hartley made one step too soon. But really, it goes back to when they first hooked up. Like, he had this pretty well calculated out. It was just a matter of finding that moment and that catalyst to, like, make him go through with it.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's definitely is he knew all along, you know, once he started to kind of fall for Corey, I think he knew that it was just a matter of time, right thing, the right moment came for him to say, I don't need Stacia anymore. And so, like, waiting for that moment, you're like, come on, Hartley. And when it finally arrives, it's like, it's very, very sweet. But these plans that Hartley has are to take Corey to the ice rink, which has one of my favorite moments in this book. I have moments in books that I love the heartbreak, like the one bit of heartbreak that, like, changes them. And I feel like the scene in the ice rink where she's in this sled and she's flying down the ice again, and then you see her kind of have this flashback and she can't control it. Like, she loses her grip. Like, she's such a strong girl and she's done so much. And to see her kind of break down and him to just hold her sitting on the ice where everything went wrong for her and everything was always felt so right. Like, I thought it was a really poignant moment that the two of them share in the rink there at Harkness.
And you've sort of been waiting for her to have that moment the entire book because she's blocked hockey out of her mind and she's kind of been forced to face it slowly with her relationship with Hartley in different ways. But I think this is the first time that she's kind of allowed herself to freak out about it. And it was definitely welcome. And I think she needed to do that. And I think it was really important that Hartley, who completely understands her situation and how she feels about hockey, I think it was really important that he was there for that.
Yeah, and I actually had this thought, like, when we first learned about her accident, like, how she wasn't able to play hockey anymore, I was like, well, aren't there those, like, I've seen the modified, like, you know, ways to play hockey and, like, you know, do a bunch of different things. So I was like, I wonder if she's ever looked into that. But then to, like, as you are reading the book and you slowly learn, like, how she has never been back to a rink and it's kind of, like, weighing on her mind in a way that she doesn't want to, like, get her parents' hopes up and, like, they're having a hard enough time going to the rink themselves and, like, all this stuff. Like, it's just something she didn't want to have to face. And the fact that she faced it with Hartley and he was so good about it, like, being like, we can leave whenever you want, it's no big deal, if this is the worst idea ever created, just let me know, I will put an end to it immediately. But that she was willing to, like, give that moment a chance showed that she was willing to, like, you know, take that step with Hartley. And it was just, oh, so cute.
Yeah, like, just it's my favorite, I'm not gonna lie. But this then leads to them actually, like, going back to his room and sleeping together, and it's adorable, and they are just adorable. And after, like, post them sleeping together, they have this line that I have to read because it's one of my favorite parts of Hartley's part of the story. He says, "Don't get me wrong. If I ever see video of you flying down the ice to score on a breakaway, I'm going to cry like a little girl. But then I'll remove a few pieces of your clothing and remember that life is good." Like, it's so Hartley in a nutshell. Like, he's this really easily, like, he doesn't hide his emotions. He's not embarrassed by anything. And he's not afraid to tell her that, like, if he ever sees a video of her being on the ice and, you know, skating free, he's going to cry. And, like, it's just, I love that little bit because I think it just perfectly defines who Hartley is.
No, definitely. And who doesn't love a happy ending? Let's be real. That's the whole point of reading romance novels, is we love the happy ending. It's really, the story isn't about if they're going to get together, because it almost always happens. The story is about how they get there. And so I think what I loved best about this novel was the how they got there, because it was complicated and it was twisty. And it wasn't just complicated because of, you know, they had a disagreement or something like that. It was complicated for so many other reasons. And that just goes to show the depth of the characters within the novel and how they kind of had to work through their own stuff. You know, I mean, Harley always talks about having shit to shovel and stuff like that. So I think it's really interesting that that's kind of basically what they had to do through the whole story to really find each other at the end. So that's part of the reason I liked it, was everything they had to go through to get there.
Yeah, and I really loved that Corey kept referring to, like, duct taping the Hope Fairy's mouth in her head. And, like, the Hope Fairy would be like, there's so much hope. And she's like, I finally just had to duct tape her mouth shut. And then there's this moment, I just had to go back into my Kindle to see, because I highlighted it. But there's this moment where she's just like, and finally, like, I had to unduct tape the, it's when, they're talking about, like, oh, when is somebody going to, hook up with Hartley again? Like, my money's that he'll have a new piece of arm candy on him before long. And Hartley kind of, like, makes eye contact with Corey that morning after the party in the dining hall before the kiss happens. And, like, the Hope, she's like, the Hope Fairy ripped the tape off her mouth and yelled, yes, there is. I just loved it so much.
Yeah, it was great. So, do you guys have anything else that we didn't talk about that you wanted to bring up?
I'm really excited that there are more books.
Yeah. And seriously, like, you can get the whole, like, you can get books 1 through 3, even though we got the first one already, but you get 1 through 3 and a couple, like, novellas, it looks like, and it's only $6.99, so it's worth the purchase, I'm just saying.
Yes, and Bridger's story, as we kind of talked about a little earlier, is incredibly complex. It's not like any other new adult book you've ever read. He's got problems that you definitely don't see coming, and it's a really, really good read. So, yeah, if you liked Hartley and Corey's story, I highly recommend the rest of the Ivy Years series, because they're really, really great.
And if you were feeling kind of meh on Bridger, read his story. It is so worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't have to sell me that one. I was already there.
Oh, and for anyone who maybe hasn't read any, like, male-male romance or any of that, the third book in the series, the one that comes after the novella, The Understatement of the Year is, like, it's really, really well known. She's won awards for it. It's a really, really beautiful story about two guys that play hockey and that know each other from childhood. And it comes after Bridger's story. But it's a really, really great book, especially if you've never read any male-male romance. Like, I have to say, it was the first version of that type of story I had ever read. And it will forever be, like, the pinnacle. Like, it's a really, really well-done tale. So, just if I haven't sold you enough already, just buy the whole set, because you'll read them and you'll love them, I promise.
And boys are just super cute, so read it for that, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love it. All right, so, do we have anything else for this episode of Book Hive, ladies, now that we've sold this entire series?
Not that I can
think of. We're good? All right. So that pretty much wraps up this episode, which is going to be massive. I realize we talked a lot about this book, like, a lot.
I know.
But clearly it was good if we talked this much. I'm just saying. So until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Brittany.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, guys.